to turn to the book of 2 Kings, chapter 3, book of 2 Kings, chapter 3. This morning we were in chapter 4. Tonight's message will go right along with this morning's, but we'd like to read verses 16 through verse 20. And he, that would be Elisha, said, "Thus saith the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. For thus saith the Lord, you shall not see wind, neither shall you see rain. Yet that valley shall be filled with water, that you may drink, both ye and your cattle and your beast. And this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He will deliver the Moabites also into your hand. And you shall smite every fenced city and every choice city, and shall fell every good tree, and stop all wells of water, and mar every good piece of land with stones." And it came to pass in the morning, when the meat offering was offered, that behold, there came water by way of Edom, and the country was filled with water. By way of background, the setting of 2 Kings chapter 3 really is the death of King Ahab. We know that Ahab was a very wicked king in the northern kingdom of Israel. The chapter opens with his son Jehoram reigning in Ahab's stead. And we are told that by this time, Jehoshaphat, who was king of Judah, the southern kingdom, had been reigning 18 years. In verses 2 and 3, we are told of the general character of Jehoram's reign, which was evil, but not as evil as his father's. In verse 4, we're introduced to Misha. We see, and Misha, king of Moab, and we see that he had 100,000 lambs. He had 100,000 lambs, and then he had all the wool. Misha was, of course, a powerful, rich sheep master. And every year he would have to pay in taxes, again, 100,000 lambs, 100,000 rams, and the wool from these. That was the tax that he would pay to the king of Israel. Misha hated paying that tax, and he viewed the death of Ahab as the ideal opportunity to revolt against that tax, which he did. We see there in verse 5. And then in verses 6 and 7, in order to stop the rebellion, Jehoram gathers together his army. He solicits Jehoshaphat, the help of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat joined forces with Jehoram. There's a message there. Jehoshaphat compromised greatly in doing so. So you have these two armies of Israel and Judah, the northern and the southern kingdoms, and they're gathered together to go against Moab. They knew that the Moabites were expecting a direct attack from the north, which would have been across the Jordan River. So they decided, since the Moabites are expecting us to attack from there, we'll march 7 days through the desert, and we'll strike from the southern wilderness. Since this way would have passed through Edom, we see that the Edomites joined with them. So now we have three kings. We have Jehoram, we have Jehoshaphat, and we have the king of Edom. Notice in verse 9. And it came to pass when they were gone over that Elijah or I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong chapter there. Verse 9, so the king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom, and they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them. So after a roundabout march of 7 days through this wilderness, these three kings, with their armies, with their animals, they run out of water. In verse 10, we see Jehoram blames God. There's a message there. Jehoram had absolutely nothing to do with God, but as soon as something went wrong, he blamed God. So there's a message there as well. In verses 11 and 12, Jehoshaphat suggests that they seek the prophet Elisha. And in verses 13 and 14, we see these three kings now very, very desperate, and we see them before Elisha, seeking the Lord. And Elisha informs them, I would not have anything to do with you, speaking to Jehoram, I wouldn't have a thing to do with you were it not for Jehoshaphat. So God was going to bless the evil because of the presence of the righteous. There's a message there. Also, I believe today that God does bless the evil for the sake of the righteous and for the presence of the righteous. So, Elisha instructs these three kings in a very plain way. And in verse 16, he says, make this valley full of ditches. He went on to tell them there would be no sign of a storm, there would be no rain, but that God would fill the ditches with water, and that God would give them victory over the Moabites. Again, we remind you of Romans 15 and verse 4, for whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience might have we would have patience and comfort through the Scriptures. So there are many lessons here for you and I. There are many things that we can gather. There are many things that we can apply from this passage of Scripture. There are many spiritual truths. There are many spiritual principles that we ought to always be mindful of. But we want to center our thoughts this evening around the instruction of verse 16. Make this valley full of ditches. We want to speak upon the subject of ditch diggers. That's what we need to be. We need to be ditch diggers. But the first thing we want to notice is notice the circumstances that these three kings with their armies found themselves in. So we have three kings. We have their armies. These armies are well skilled in war. They are embarking on a military mission. And this is a picture of human organization. This is a picture of human planning. It is a picture of human calculation. It is a picture of human preparation. It is a picture of human strength. It is a picture of human purpose. But in spite of all of these things, they are brought to the end of themselves by a single circumstance. By a single circumstance, they are brought to their wits' end. Three kings with their well-skilled armies are brought to a standstill by a circumstance. They couldn't go any further. All their planning didn't matter. All their organization didn't matter. This circumstance stopped them. All their skill, all their ability, none of these things mattered. This circumstance brought them to a stop. We read in verse 9, and there was no water. That's their circumstance. And there was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them. All their organizing, all their planning, all their calculation, all their preparation, all their strength and purpose could not fix this problem. No water. No water. All their ingenuity could not fix this problem. No water. So there is this powerful and organized military host, fully equipped with all the means of warfare, but they're powerless. They're rendered powerless by a circumstance. No water. They have run out of water. Not only have they run out of water, there's no water to be found. And all their plans have come to a halt. Again, notice verse 9, there was no water for the host and for the cattle that followed them. All their organization, all their calculations could not fix this problem. So there they are. In the hot, barren desert, no water. They did not have jeeps to carry their supplies, or they didn't have personnel carriers. They used animals for this. They used the animals to carry their supplies. They used their animals to carry themselves. And these animals could drink 15 to 20 gallons of water a day, each one. But there was no water. So they are in a dire situation. They are in an unexpected place. They weren't expecting this. They certainly would not have gone that way had they known we're going to run out of water. I'm sure they calculated, and I'm sure they thought we have enough water with us. So they're in an unexpected place. The men, the soldiers, the animals are becoming dehydrated, and they are facing the very real possibility that they are going to die of thirst. And if they didn't die of thirst, they would come to such a weakened condition that the Moabites would very easily overcome them. So here's their situation. They are out of water. There is the threat of the Moabites. They are facing certain death. They are suffering. They are hurting. They are disheartened. They are restless. They are fretful. They are agitated. They are overwhelmed. They are fearful. And the whole camp is filled with pessimism. They are absolutely miserable and in distress of soul. Didn't matter how much they organized. This was a helpless, they were in a helpless situation. And no doubt without water, they were facing exhaustion. And there they are, in this hot, barren desert, these three kings with their armies, they find themselves in a dilemma. They have an urgent need. This is not what they had envisioned. This is not what they had planned for. They are at a dead end. They are in a life and death crisis. It appears to be an absolutely impossible situation. These three kings with their armies, they're stuck. They are stuck in a deadly situation. They are in a place that if they stay, they cannot continue to live. There are many of God's people in that same place. They are in a place. They are in a situation. They are in a condition. They can't stay there and live and thrive spiritually. And these armies could not stay here and live. If they stay there, they're going to die. So these three kings and their well-skilled and prepared armies, they're in need of a miracle. Again, as we said this morning, a miracle is an occurrence above nature and the ability of man. It is the intervention and the manifestation of God. It is the power of God. It is God in action. And make no mistake about it, these three kings, these three armies, they needed a miracle. Now, if you can picture the scene, it is an absolutely pitiful scene. But we need to picture this scene because God's people often find themselves in this same situation. Traveling through life, in spite of our plans, in spite of our calculations, in spite of all of our organization, in spite of all the provisions that we have, in spite of our abilities, there are going to be times when we are in desperate situations. There are going to be times when we are in overwhelming circumstances. There are going to be times when we need the miraculous hand of God. So that's their circumstances. We see that there was a seeking of the Lord. In verse 11 again, Jehoshaphat realizes we need the Lord's intervention. He can look around. He can see that the armies are dying of thirst. He can look to the north, the south, the east, or the west, and he can see there's no water anywhere. We need the Lord's intervention. Jehoshaphat realized that. He realized we need to inquire. We need to inquire of the Lord. We need to seek the Lord. So there is the realization that the answer and remedy to their situation was not in their intellect. It was not in their power. It was not in their ability. It was not in their resources. The answer and the remedy was in God. We need to come to that realization. We need to live in that realization that God is the answer. So we read in verse 12, "So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him," went down to Elisha. So there are three kings standing before God's man, Elisha. They are seeking the Lord through Elisha. All their self-confidence is gone. All their self-sufficiency is gone. And there they stand before Elisha. The weight of a pressing need is upon them. There they are. They're humbled. They are ready to submit. And they are truly desirous to hear a word from the Lord. Again, we need to picture this scene. We need to picture this scene because it is the need of a miracle. And each and every one of us have needs of the miraculous in our life. Right now, there are situations, there are circumstances, there are conditions that are overwhelming to flesh and blood. Present right now are situations, circumstances, and conditions that are beyond human ability, beyond human resources. Present right now in this building, there are situations, there are circumstances, there are conditions that require the miraculous hand of God. There are needs. There are needs with no sign of provision in sight. That requires a miracle. There are those weighted down with burdens, and you feel, "I can't go any further. My strength is spent. I can't go on." That's a need for a miracle. It's a need for the intervention of God. There are trials. There are difficulties. And there's no end in sight. There are battles and struggles. And there is a very real danger that some are going to lose the battle. They're going to lose the struggle. It requires the intervention of the Lord. There are foes that appear to be unstoppable. There are obstacles that appear to be insurmountable. There are problems, and the problems appear to have no solution. There are questions that perhaps no one has the answers for. There are rivers that are absolutely impassable. There are fortifications that cannot be broken through. There are wildernesses that people wander around in, and there doesn't appear to be any way out of that wilderness. There's valleys, and there appears to be no end. There are hurts, there are wounds, there are sorrows, there are heartaches without a remedy in sight. There is waste and there is ruin, a state of desolation, and there's no sign of restoration in sight. There are storms and there's no break in the clouds. Every day there is the need of the miraculous. And I assure you right now that present in this building, there is the need of miracles. These three kings with their armies need a miracle. So what do? The same thing the woman did with the pot of oil. They sought the Lord. If you need a miracle, realize you need a miracle and seek the one, the only one, who can work that miracle. There's no need to waste time seeking anyone else. Seek the Lord. So they seek God and they get an answer, or they receive instruction. And again, as we stated this morning, going to the Lord, you will not hear many times that which will sound reasonable to the mind of man. Notice in verse 15, they state their condition. And Elisha says, bring me a minstrel. Bring me a musician. There they are in the desert. The powerful enemy of Moab is just a few miles away. The troops of these three kings are dying of thirst. They tell their plight to Elisha, and Elisha says, I need a musician. That's pretty odd. I'm sure that seemed very odd to these three kings. But Elisha asks for music. Again, they're out of water. They're dying of thirst. They're in danger. And Elisha said, bring me a minstrel. Under the circumstances, that would seem absurd to the natural mind of man. But the reason Elisha said, bring me a minstrel, was to create a spiritual atmosphere and to calm and still his own soul in order to hear the voice of God. See, I believe that Elisha became disturbed just to see Jehoram. Ahab was wicked, and here's his son. And he's already stated, I wouldn't have a thing to do with you, Jehoram, if it weren't for Jehoshaphat. And I believe he was disturbed. And the reason he asked for a musician was he needed to have his mind calmed so he could hear from the Lord. Notice what it says. Verse 15 again. But now bring me a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. So he had to still his own heart and soul in order to receive the message from the Lord. And then he said, "Thus saith the Lord." And then he proceeded to say, "Make this valley full of ditches." He proceeded on in verse 17 to give them the promise of God's blessing. God would fill those ditches with water. He would do so without a storm. He would do so without rain. But he would fill those ditches. He would put water in those ditches. And in verse 18, he reminded them, and this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. That is, to fill those ditches with water was a very minor thing to God. It was a very small thing. It was a very insignificant thing. It was no problem. None whatsoever for God. We must always remember that. God not only is able, it's easy. It's easy for Him. So now imagine these three kings going back to their thirsty and exhausted and restless and distressed and desperate soldiers who had been marching for 7 days, and they're anxiously awaiting for their kings to return with word from Elisha. And they, when they see the kings, I'm sure they're saying, "What did he say? What did he say? What did he say?" And they answered, "Make this valley full of ditches." In other words, men, start digging. These soldiers are dying of thirst. They're gasping for their last ounce of strength. And the kings return with the command, "Start digging ditches. In fact, dig so many ditches that the whole valley is filled with ditches." And I'm sure in unison, the response was, "What? What did you say?" And then perhaps it was repeated, "Start digging ditches. Make the valley full of ditches." And I'm sure the response was, "Why? Why should we dig ditches?" And the answer came, "God is going to fill the ditches with water." And perhaps the response was, "Is it going to rain? Is there going to be a storm?" And the answer is, "No, it's not going to rain. No, there's not going to be a storm. God is just going to fill the ditches with water, and God is going to give us victory over the Moabites." This would have seemed very strange to these soldiers. Digging ditches is hard work. And these men are already exhausted. Digging ditches will work up a thirst. And these men are already on the verge of dehydration. And there is no water to refresh them. But the message was, "Make this valley full of ditches, and God will fill them with water, and God will give you the victory over the Moabites." And these soldiers of Israel, Judah, and Edom, probably in the thousands, began to dig. They dug with their hands. They found sticks. They dug with sticks. I'm sure they dug with their swords. They dug with their weapons. They're digging for their lives. Reading on in verse 20, "And it came to pass in the morning that, behold, there came water by way of Edom, and the country was filled with water." The Moabites would come upon these armies. They would see the sun reflecting upon the water in the ditches.
And the Moabites, knowing there has not been a storm, it has not rained, this is why God said there will be no wind, there will be no rain. This was to confuse the Moabites. So they come and they assume that the reflection, they draw the conclusion, it must be blood. These three armies have turned against one another, they have killed one another, and they're all dead. Let's go down and get the spoil. And to their surprise, when they got there, it wasn't water or blood. It was water. And Israel and Judah and Edom defeated the Moabites. So what was God's answer to their dilemma? God's answer was Himself. God's answer was faith in Him. God's answer was faith in Him and obedience to Him. Again, as we said this morning, God is not some shortcut. He is the solution. Do not look at God as a shortcut. He's not a shortcut, but He is the answer. He is the solution. So let's apply this to ourselves. We want to go back to verse 16. Make this valley full of ditches. They were to dig ditches. Why? To receive what only God could do. To receive the water that only God could send. The message of make this valley full of ditches. The message there is make room for God to work. The message that the kings received was God is going to work a miracle. You go and you make room for God to work. You do this by digging ditches. In other words, you make room for the blessings of God. You go and you prepare vigorously to receive what you believe God is going to send or what God has for you. Basically, what God is telling them when He said, make this valley full of ditches, is get ready for a miracle. Get ready for a miracle. We need miracles, but there aren't many that are ready for them. There aren't many that have made room for God to work. There aren't many who are making room for the blessings of God. Now these men, these armies, they dug literal ditches. And this provides a spiritual principle for you and I. Make this valley full of ditches is metaphorical for you and I. We're not to literally dig ditches, but spiritually we are. Metaphorically we are. We must not be content in praying for miracles. How many times we pray for miracles, but we make absolutely no preparation to receive them? None. We make no preparation to retain whatever it is that God is going to send, whatever it is we're asking for. This is what God is telling them. Make this valley full of ditches. That is, be prepared to receive the water that I'm going to send. How often we pray, but we dig no ditches. We make no preparation to receive the answer and to receive the blessings from God. We are in need of miracles. What that means is we are in need of God's intervention. We need God to intervene. We need to prepare for such. We need God's manifestation. We need to prepare for such. We need God's provision. Now notice, make this valley. Make this valley. You dig right where you are. That was the message to these soldiers. There you are in this desert. You're dying of thirst. You dig ditches right where you are. Make this valley full of ditches. Here we are in desperate need of miracles. We need miracles in individual lives. There are families that need miracles. There are marriages that need miracles. There are homes that need miracles. The workplace needs miracles. The church needs miracles. And wherever it may be, we need to seek the Lord for the miracles we need. And then we need to hear God say, make this valley, wherever it is, make this valley full of ditches. In other words, in the midst of your desert, wherever that might be, whatever it might be, seek God, obey God, dig a ditch to receive from God. You may find yourself in the midst of darkness. Dig a ditch. Pray. Ask God to send light. And then make preparation to receive that light. You may be in the desert of weakness. Seek the Lord. Dig a ditch to receive the strength that you need. You may be in the desert of defeat. Seek God. Obey God. Dig a ditch to receive what God has. In other words, wherever you are, whatever your situation is, make room for God. Make room for God. You see, many times people pray, and while they're praying, they're cramming their life full of things. And God is saying, make this valley full of emptiness, and I'll fill it. Again, God specializes in filling emptiness. Dig the ditch, and I'll fill it. Seems to me that we ought to dig deep ditches then. We ought to dig wide ditches. We ought to dig long ditches, trenches. Because God will fill it. Make this valley full of ditches. Why? To receive what only God can do. They had the promise that God would fill the ditches. And again, this would be but a light thing to the Lord. So whatever needs are in your life today, hear God say, make this valley, wherever you are, full of ditches, and I will fill it. I will fill it. You don't have to fill it. I will fill it. And it's an easy thing for me to do, is what God is saying. We need to hear God say, make this valley full of ditches. And we need to be digging ditches individually. We ought to surround our individual life with ditches. When you come into the house of God, you ought to dig a ditch right where you're standing, right where you're going to sit. Why? To receive. And to retain what God has. again, we're speaking metaphorically. There's a spiritual principle that is being taught here. Our lives individually ought to be surrounded by ditches. Husbands and wives need to pray together. And then they need to dig a ditch together to receive from God. Husbands and wives need to pray concerning their problems or whatever, their needs. But don't stop there. Dig a ditch. Dig a ditch together and expect God to fill that ditch with what only He can. Families need to pray together. It's a lost thing, and it's sad. Families do not pray together very often. Do a lot of things together, but prayer usually isn't one of them. Families need to pray together. And then they need to collectively dig ditches to receive what only God can do. Church members need to pray together and then collectively dig ditches to receive again what only God can do. We need to be ditch diggers. We need to be a people of prayer. A people who is going to seek God. But also we're going to make preparation to receive from God. We can pray for revival, but do we prepare to receive that revival? We can pray for innumerable things, but do we prepare to receive what God has for us? Most make no preparation. Again, when you pray, you ask God to work a miracle in your life. You ask God to intervene. Don't you think you ought to at least make some room? Make some room for God to work? God, of course, can work anywhere. But the spiritual principle here is make room. This is what God is saying. Make room. We need to make room for God in our lives, in our homes, in our marriages. Make room for God. It seems to me that in most lives, God is being more and more pushed out. And the ditches are being filled with the things of the world. Make this valley full of emptiness, and I'll fill it. And I'll fill it in a way that you wouldn't even think of. And I believe that is still true today. We need to dig some ditches. You sit down and you study the Word of God, you need to pray, Lord, show me, reveal to me truth, work miracles, but you need to make some preparation in order to receive what God has. So God help us to dig ditches wherever we are. Wherever we find ourselves, seek God. Obey His instruction. However foolish it may seem. I mean, it doesn't make sense. Make this valley full of ditches. You just obey God. You cannot lose following the instruction of God. That's true in your individual life. It's true in your married life. It's true in your home life. It's true in your work life. It's true in your church life. It's true everywhere. You just obey God. And the only way we're going to do that is we must believe that he's going to fill the ditch with water. We must believe what he says, just like the woman this morning with the pot of oil. She had to believe. And believing, she just kept on obeying. And we have to believe. And everything in this world is aimed at shaking our belief, shaking our faith, to cast doubt upon our faith. People are very good at planting seeds, and the devil is very good at planting little seeds of doubt. And the reason he does that is because if you doubt, you're going to then begin to question, well, should I obey? What's the point in obeying? You just keep believing. Keep believing and obey. And I'm telling you, if God tells you to dig a ditch, dig a ditch. Doesn't matter where it is, dig a ditch. And he can fill it. And he's the only one who can. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us in verse 6.